accession number 19067, real one.
Fred McLeod, real one. Where were you born, please?
St. Mark Street, East Hall.
Which year was this?
6th of the 10th, 1915.
Did you grow up and go to school in Hull?
Yes.
Which school did you go to?
Buckingham Street.
And how old were you when you left there?
When I left, 14 year old.
In 1929?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
Doing what?
I was assisting the groundsman on Elves' Pelican Recreation Ground.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
No. I was a shift worker for Hull BOCM, British Island Cake Mills, and I joined them in 1933, and I was called up the 24th of June, 1940. And I went to Workington Drill Hall, and we stayed there overnight, had tea and a corned beef sandwich. And then the next morning was transported on coal merchants' motorised coal wagons, and we went down to the workhouse at Cockermouth, and we did our training, and we were there till the Christmas of 1940.
What was the training like at Cockermouth?
The training, very hard. We won the Northumberland County Division Cross Country Marathon, and it was 25 miles, and we did it with full marching order, and we did it in 5 hours 40 minutes, and that was the record time for that across the fells. And I think there was about 11 different battalions that were competing against.
Were you a runner yourself?
No, well, this cross country marathon, it was the military style of cross country force route marches. And everybody out of every section of every different company or battalion took part, and it was field service marching order, which there was the knapsack, infantry webbing, all clothing, ammunition boots, full water bottle, 50 rounds of ammunition, rifle, bayonet, and entrenching tool. And I've got bad blisters. I'd got about halfway, and I developed this blister at the back of my heel. And of course, there was quite a few suffering blisters. And I remember our officer, the MO, telling us to get down, take our boots off. And the MO, battalion MO, was with us. And he treated these blisters, and it was the blisters. And they put iodine on that nearly sent us through the roof. And then they put this sticking plaster over top of that, and I said, right, that's it. And believe me, for what would suffering with the blisters, and after that, it was like walking on feather beds, it was really. And So we completed it in 5 hours 40 minutes, and that was a record time. And of course, we won it. We all got a day's pay extra, and a day in Carlisle as a present, you know.
Were you in a battalion by now?
in the battalion.
Had you actually joined a battalion by then?
Oh, yes.
So you were in the 9th Borders by then?
Yeah, well, that was the 9th Border Regiment. That was the youngest battalion in the Border Regiment. There was the 1st Battalion, the 2nd Battalion, the 4th and 5th, and we were the last one, the 9th Battalion. And we was at Cockermouth. A Company was at Headquarter Company was at Workington. D Company was at Egremont. B Company was at Cockermouth. And I think C Company was at
Well, don't worry too much. Which company were you in?
B Company.
And which platoon were you in?
12th Platoon.
Can you remember the leadership in your unit? People in charge of you?
Yeah, I can. Do you mean the company commander?
Yes.
Yeah, the company commander was Major Cooper. And I'd like to tell you a bit about Major Cooper.
Tell me now, please.
When we was on OPL on Imphal Road.
Oh, well, tell me later. No, don't jump ahead.
Mm.
Now, can you remember who was in charge of the platoon?
Yeah, a chap called White, Chokey White. And there was a chap called Foster. He was a sergeant. There was a corporal called Corporal Black. And there was another lad from Hull, and he got to, I think it was nearly a record time, he got to be a sergeant. And he was about 6'2" or 6'3". And they called him Bob Duncan. And he was from Hull, Escort Street.
Is he still alive?
That I don't know. That I don't know. That I could tell you quite a few of the lads that was called up with me and that was in B Company. There was Peter McManus. There was a chap named Tubby Larkins, and he was about as broad as he was tall. That was his nickname, Tubby. And it's going back about 50 years.
Were you happy when you were at Cockermouth?
Very. Very. You see, it's something that will never go out of my mind, Cockermouth, because it was not only it was a workhouse that we was in. It'd been an old people's workhouse, and when we went in it, it was absolutely overgrown with brambles and scrubs and this, that, and the other. And that was one of the first things that we had to cope with, was making it habitable, you know. There was ordinary wooden floors, and after we'd been there sometimes, We was on 7 shillings a week. And there were 13 of us in our section. And to make ends meet, we all put sixpence in. And this sixpence, it took us to 6 and 6 pence per week. And out of that, we bought Blanco, Brasso, silver, soap, razor blades, and all our own toilerettes out. And if we hadn't been clubbing that sixpence each in, well, I just don't know what we'd have done. That was just our one way about it. And she got 7 shillings a week. I got 7 shillings a week.
Oh, no, I've got more than 7.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
out of that we used to go about threepence each, and because everything and everybody was rationed severely to the hilt. You didn't go hungry or out like that, but you could always find room for a little bit more. You was always hungry, ready for your food, and we got breakfast, dinner, tea, no supper. And like I say, we used to clubbing together, and we used to buy, we used to get a couple of loaves for the 13 of us. And we had a fire at one end of the billet where we was in, and we used to do a bit of toast. And of course, we used to rustle up a brew, a mashing of tea. And that was that.
What happened to you at Christmas of that year?
That year, I think I was looking. I was on leave, wasn't I? Christmas 1940. I got married while I was at Cockermouth, and I asked for a compassionate leave, and I had two interviews with the CEO, and one at that time was a Captain Arbuthnot, and another one was a Lieutenant Blamire, and they asked me if I really wanted to come home and get married, so I said yes. And they asked me what the reason was, why I wanted to get married. Well, when I was called up, Hulby OCM, they was running a scheme for chaps who was married, and they was getting their weekly allowance made up to what they got when they was working before they was called up. And if you got married within 8 weeks of the day of being called up, you qualified for this extra money, which we was. We got married on the, can you remember what day we got married?
24th of August.
Oh, the 24th of August, that was 8 weeks to the day. And she qualified for it, but I got no extra. I still got the 7 shillings. And she got I was earning about 2 guineas a week for 48 hours on a 3-shift rota, 6 to 2, 2 to 10, and 10 to 6, including Sunday night.
So what happened to you next?
When we... We moved to Orley Island and was on coastal defence, and we was on 6 hours anti-radio patrols, and we patrolled from I can't remember what they call the castle.
Panic.
No, not Annika. This one was where the lady with the lamp was born. Went out on the rocks to guard these maroon seamen. What did they call the lady with the lamp?
I've forgotten. But it doesn't really matter anyway. That will be on the record.
Yeah.
It might occur to you later. But from there to where?
But we also, from this one, Alec Castle, it was another, Bamborough Castle. That was the one. From Bamborough to Beale. And it was, I should say, the Coastland Railway that they're going to, from London to Edinburgh, used to run right along the seafront there. And we used to, on a warmish day, or all that, we used to go and sit on top of these hills, and we used to watch the Flying Scotchman. And there was another Flying Scot, they called it the Empire of India. And she was the same type of engine as the that one that broke the steam record. The Mallard, yes, on the same run, London to Edinburgh. And we was there till they moved us out to Newbiggin, I think it was. Newbiggin, and from there we marched, full marching order, and we landed what they call them, the platform there, and this train came in, and we got in, I think it was the first 4 or 5 coaches, and it pulled up, and some more got in, and we entrained about 9 o'clock on the night time, and we pulled into on the Clyde, it was, I can't remember the, but it was on the Clyde. And we got off the train, and we walked straight across the platform like that, and it was there, the OK days.
When you were on coastal defence, yeah, did you think the Germans would invade?
Definitely. Definitely. We stood to... Every night and every morning, one was what they called hot water, and the hot water meant from 9 o'clock on the night time till about 11:45, and then what they called cold water, and we stood down at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then that was it. Till the next night, and then we stood to again. We're standing till night and morning, night and morning, night and morning, and there was air raids going on. It seemed over searchlights over Newcastle and whatnot. You could see the moon and the circle round the moon, and you could see the German bombers just like moths coming through the and the Akak having a go to them. I don't think they ever shot any down, but that's as true as talking now.
If they had invaded, what kind of an account of yourselves do you think you would have made?
Well, England's my home, and it's my best. And I think I'd have got a good account of myself. If it's either a case of killed or be killed, and naturally we hoped it would never happen, but we put 35,000 anti-personnel beachmans, landmans, with a double apron barbed wire fence, with a triple dannet wire, what they call a razor wire now. And I should say it was about 25 metres deep and about 4 metres high. That was it. We were at one side and the sea at the other side. And then it was come what may.
What kind of living conditions did you have in Northumberland?
Very poor. Very poor. We was at Ross Farm, that's where it was. And at one side there was just marshes, rabbits, and a dog called Rusty. And the dog that was called Rusty, it was a pup that had been born there. And they'd moved the farmer out because it was a restricted area. And of course the dog, he refused to go. And he seemed to be at home with us. And we slept on the floor. We had what were called donkey's breakfasts to lay on.
What was that?
And that was a polyass that was 30 inches broad at the top end, and it narrowed down to about 9 inches at the bottom. It was about 6 inches deep, and it was filled with straw, and it laced up at the side, and that was our mattress, straw mattress, and there was like a round pillow with it, the same stuff. Straw, that was it. With 3 blankets and no sheets. And we slept in our denims. Like them was like canvas uniforms. Not serge or material like, but canvas. And we used them as pyjamas, you know. And not only that, if you had to stand so sharpish, straight away it was out of bed and a rifle, equipment, and that was it. Till somebody come and they brought you some decent gear out, you know, that room would layer out like that.
Did anybody fall sick?
I beg your pardon?
Did anybody fall sick?
Well, sick, do you say?
Yes.
Well, there was that winter, said we moved out from Cockermouth about early January, and there was a lot of flow going about, and there were one or two of the chaps went down with pneumonia as well, and we went out on patrol one night, and there was a chap called Albert Mudd. He was a Lance Corporal, and he was from Hull. And he was in charge of this patrol. And we always had what they called a getaway man and a scout up front. And I was the leading scout. And it started snowing. And you couldn't see all the island. And you could hardly only see through your fingers. And he came up to me, did Albert Mudd, and he said to me, he said, "What do you think, Mac?" So I just turned around, and that these are the actual words that I said: "If he comes tonight, it'll be a bloody hero," just like that. So I said, "Right, about 10 because and we went back to the Coast Guard's hut. Now I said, "It's true. If Albert Mudd's, I hope he's still alive today." And we went to the Coast Guard's hut, and this hut, it was about 10 foot by 8 foot. The Coast Guard, he had a bed, a bunk bed at one end, and it was also in wireless communication with Bamburgh, I think it was, a Coast Guard at Bamburgh. And he said, "Right, come in, shut the door." And he browed up, and there was 13 of us in that hut. It was 10 foot by 8 foot. I'll never forget it. And we were set three abreast on the floor, knees up, and arms round each other's shoulders like that to keep warm. And the next morning, we tried to get out of the hut, this hut, the way it was situated, this Coast Guard's hut, it was in between, in the sand dunes. And we couldn't get the door open, but eventually we did do. And we set off to go back to our headquarters, which was Belford Hall. And that was about 5 or 6 miles away from the coast. There was a farmer, and he was bringing some cows in out the field because the conditions were so bad. And he shouted to us, "Are you going my way?" So this Corporal Muddy said, "Yes, Belford Hall." So I said, "Right, grab the hold of a cow's tail." And it's true, is it? It's true, is this? We held on to the... If it hadn't been for that farmer and them cows that night, we'd have never got to the main road, because the sand dunes and the drifts and whatnot, it was practically up to your armpits. And if it hadn't been for that farmer and that cow, I don't think I'd have been here today. You know, the conditions was absolutely... I don't know whether you can remember 1947, but 1947 was the worst winter that was experienced in this area. But I can assure you that night that we was out there on the east coast there, that was the worst I'd ever experienced. So that was that. We came back, we got back to Belford Hall, and to give us half a mug of rum each, tell us to get bedded down, and we hadn't to be disturbed for about 48 hours. I've never been in such a condition in my life, so cold. I mean, you can only get cold to a certain extent. Till you're absolutely, you can't numb, you're numb, you know, you just seem as though you can't move. And that hadn't helped us a lot, setting the three in a row in this Coast Guard's hut, huddled up to try to keep warm.
Did anybody have any permanent after effects?
I don't think so. There was one amusing, well, I thought it was very amusing, while we was there at Ross Farm. There was that many going down sick with flu and this, that and the other. One chap had slipped and he'd broke his leg. Now, I said, absolutely truthful is this. We've got to be so sure to men that there used to be one man out on the point. And about 25 yards away, there was another chap on this hill covering him on the road. And the weather was improving. It had got round to about the May time, and it was really beginning to get nice. And the MO was coming up to see us. And somebody had hit on the idea that to save a man, instead of putting a man up on the point to watch the chap on guard, he sent a brilliant idea that they'd put this chap with a broken leg, sat in a deck chair there. Because all he was doing was looking up the road, saying, if the invader...